You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
I think I hunted for 5 days out there this year, and three of those days I had this giant 160-inch 10-point on camera in daylight right in front of my stand.
It's like he knew.
And
it's like he knew. And not only that one, but on my other property, I had this giant buck on camera in front of my stand. And it was just like, I think the 27th of October and the 31st of October, almost all of my cameras had big bucks on them.
And the thing was, it wasn't like they were daylighting at, you know, like 2 minutes before last light. No, this was at like 3:30 in the afternoon and
like the
10 o'clock in the morning.
Mr. Clean, the guy that I started out my season, once I knew that that other property was gone, the number one target buck that I had this year, I saw there was one day when I had that buck on camera five times. Same camera. It was like 8:30 a.m., 10:45, noon, 2 o'clock, 3:45. I mean, it was just like, I knew he was betting. He's betting on my 25 acres, and he's just getting up and kind of moving around, foraging, going back and laying down. Because, like, he's not traveling from property to property that many times. Especially like those pictures, that wasn't during the elk hunt. That was early season. That was like late August that he was doing that. And so I'm thinking like, dude, I've got this deer pegged. I'm going to get him. And I had him on camera one morning. I woke up. I had him on camera at 2:30. And I'm like, all right, there's a good chance he's bedded in the south side of the woods. I could see the direction he exited the camera frame. And so I went and got my stand. And I'm up there probably 35, 45 minutes before legal light. And I don't like everything set up. I've got my bow set up. I've got an arrow knocked. I've got my thumb release clipped to my D loop. I've got all of it done. And I can't remember what it was. I think I just like kind of shifted a little bit and he was in front of me, like right in front of me. And I didn't know. I'm assuming, I can't say for sure that it was him. But you know the difference between a doe running off and a big mature buck running off. It's like you can just hear it in the footsteps. And all of a sudden, I just hear it. There was no blowing. Did none of that. Just tore out of there. And I'm like, he was within 10 yards. Like, he was right under my tree, and I never knew it. And so that led to really a couple months of not having a whole lot of deer activity. It was just warm weather. It seemed like all of season was warm. I didn't have any pictures, like zero pictures and videos of rutting activity, which is crazy to me, until probably 5 nights ago. I had two of my target bucks just tickling antlers. I mean, it wasn't rutting activity, but they're just standing in front of my camera, just tickling antlers. Right. And I'm like, of course you would. So, yeah, just it was like one thing after the next. And, I mean, I've got it coming. Like, I've had a couple really, really good years where I've filled a lot of tags, had great experiences, put a lot of meat in the freezer. And so it's about time that I have a bad year. I just hope that, like, the next 20 years of bad luck all happen this year.
Yeah. Get it all at once. This year was, like, it was one of those years where I realized as a bow hunter, and I've only been bow hunting a couple years, but I realized how much has to go right for you to actually get that animal on the ground. Like, it's obviously a struggle just to get in bow range, but then like you were talking about with the buck and your bow getting stuck, that's, I mean, getting drawn back is a completely different part of the story. So like, there are just so many factors that have to line up perfectly, and then you get the shot and then it drops and you don't get much penetration. It's just like, there's so much that's got to work out. And this year for you, Austin, it worked out amazing. Yeah. But I mean, you're due for a bad year.
Every time,
or a couple.
Every time Austin would call me or text me, I'm like, I don't want to hear about that, man. Like, let me guess, you shot another amazing animal. Let me guess, you went out to Colorado for the very first time and shot an elk with your bow, which nobody does, especially on their first year.
Dude, when I told, we had a agent stop by our camp, and he was nice guy, doing his job, trying to catch us slipping, And when we, he goes, "You have any success?" And we're like, "Yeah, opening or yeah, opening day." And he's like, "Wait, what?" And he was like, "It's the average out here in this area is one in every 12 years." And I was just like, "Crap!" Like it's been really hard. I'll say this: it's been really hard to talk about my season when really all my friends outside of like Cam and maybe Brian have struggled, like. You struggled, even this last, the last day of season, I walk out.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I walk out. I had literally told Dan earlier that day that I wasn't able to hunt this evening. Going to spend time with my wife, yada, yada. And I go to grab a stand and I brought my bow, as all good bow hunters should, is always just have a weapon with you when you're going out in the woods. If you can hunt, like, don't go out, obviously, now and shoot a deer. You're going to get a visit from Green Jeans. But I walk out, and my wife texts me and goes, "Hey, there are four deer up here." And I'm like, "Oh, that must mean there are deer in the area." Because usually at this place, when there's one deer, there's about 10 deer.
Yeah.
So I kind of am like, all right, you know, I'll get ready. I start, I'm walking back to the stand, just talking to her, like, yeah, or, you know, and not like not sharing intel because she could still see the deer when I shot.
Yeah.
Like she could see the deer that she was talking about. So, but she was just saying, "Oh yeah, they're playing in the yard and all this." And I literally just, I'm walking and I look up and there's a doe 20 yards from me. And I'm like, I throw my phone down in the snow and just clip on an arrow real quick, draw back, shoot, kill a deer. And then grab the stand, grab the deer, and then you call me and tell me about yours. And I'm like, "Oh, well, I had the same thing happen, and I actually killed mine." And then, you know, I came out to help you, and that was the weirdest blood trail. Like, we can get into that a little bit, but, like, it was just, this season has been so, I've been blessed this season. I don't deserve it, and I fully am prepared for next season. To show you all that I'm not really a good hunter. I was just lucky as crap this year.
Yeah. No, that final day, man, I was like, all right, I've got one day to go out. And it's just been a weird year altogether because even though I've had all of these encounters and mess ups, I just haven't hunted as much this year as I normally do. Like, my wife's pregnant. We've been traveling a ton. Death in the family. Like, it's just been... We've been all over the place. So finally I'm like, hey, it's the last day. I want to get out. So I go out that morning, nothing really happens. And I thought that was it. I was going to start pulling sets down. Mm-hmm. And my wife was like, "So what time are you going back out tonight?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know.
Soon.
Maybe in a little bit." And so, I go out there and I always check my cameras before I go out, right? Just because I'm like, dude, I don't want to be walking in on a big buck, although that would be sweet. Like, when it's 5 degrees below zero, everything's crunchy. Like, it echoes forever. There's no wind. I'm like, man, you know, I got to make sure that they're not hanging out in these woods right now. So check the cameras. Nothing's there. I think there was a doe there and a single-sided spike at about 2 hours before I got out there. And so I walk, I'm like, all right, with the wind, I'm going to enter from a different direction. And so I'm walking in and I get about 10 feet into the woods and I look over and there's a deer. And I'm like, oh crap, dude, that's a deer for sure. And I can't see the head. I can see the body and it's at 55 yards and it's just not a doable, like the direction it's heading, there's not really a window for it. Unless it like kind of wraps around and starts heading north. And so I'm like just ranging a bunch of different trees and then I look and there's another deer and then another deer and another deer and they're all like walking my direction. And so I'm like, shoot, like this is actually going to happen. I've got my mittens on. My arrows are all in the quiver. My thumb release is in my bino harness. And I'm like, I am not prepared for this. I've got my bridge for my saddle, like fully extended and looped over my neck, right? So it's not catching brush on the way in. And I'm just like, oh crap. Like, so I start like pulling my mittens off, like getting an arrow knocked, getting my release clipped in. And then I see this one doe. It was all does from what I could see. It was all does. And then that single sided spike. And I see this one deer and it's heading towards like a really, really good shooting lane. It's not a shooting lane that I cleared. It just happens to be like just inside the edge row of trees. You know how sometimes those edge trees get really thick and then there's almost like just a corridor mm-hmm. on the inside of them. And it's walking towards that. And I'm like, I'm about to have a broadside shot at this thing at like, I don't know, 35, 40 yards. And so I range this tree that it's about to go behind. And I can't remember. I think it was at like 36. So I'm like, all right, it's right on the other side of this tree, probably 38. I adjust my sight. I draw back. Of course it stops. And I'm like, dude, this deer is going to see me for sure when it comes around this corner. Like if it turns to look at me, because all the deer were favoring my direction and then they were just kind of like foraging and stuff. And this one, I was like, as soon as it walks out that way, it's got a row of hedge that it's going to run into. So it's going to have to turn towards me. And so I can't draw back at that point. Like I've got to do it now. So I draw back. It steps out broadside. I get the pin settled and I let it go. And I'm like, you know, those shots where you shoot and you're like dead. Like you release, you're like, everything was good. I was holding steady, like held it right on it. And I shoot, and I'm shooting Illuminox, or like lighted Nox. I think they're the cheap Amazon brand, but they actually work great.
They work so good.
A tenth of the price, right? Yeah. I love them, and I swear by them. And I shoot, and I see my arrow in flight, and then as it's flying, the woods erupt. And there are 2 to 3 times as many deer in the woods as what I thought were. And it like distracts my brain enough to where I don't see where the arrow hits. I don't hear the arrow. I mean, I heard the arrow hit, but it was amongst a bunch of other noise, so I couldn't tell what was what. It was just like chaos. And then these deer are all like zigzagging and just tearing out of there. And I'm like, I don't even know which deer is which at this point. Like, I really didn't. And when I shot, the doe that I was shooting at, behind her probably, I mean, it seemed like there was a deer 15 yards behind her, 20 yards behind her, 25 yards. I mean, like there were just a lot of deer in that direction that I didn't know were way back behind her. And so like they all split and I'm like, I don't know where to look. And then all of a sudden I see this one deer go out to my left in the field. Almost all of them, like it's heading northeast. Almost all of them are kind of fanned out heading anywhere from southeast to southwest. But like general south direction, and this is the only one that was going north. And so that kind of gave me an indication, like that's probably her. Mm-hmm. I just mixed her up with all the other deer. And so I'm like watching the other deer, the ones that I can see. I caught a couple glimpses of her in the field. And as I'm watching these other deer, I thought I heard a crash in the field. And so I'm like, okay, we're good. I'm going to start checking these prints. I mean, it's fresh snow. I'm checking the prints in the snow, making sure there's no blood. I find my arrow right away, and you saw the arrow. Mm-hmm. And it was like the blood was, I walked to the shot site immediately, and the blood was frozen on the arrow already. Yep. And I'm like, what the heck? So I'm looking for blood on the ground, walk out in the field, find blood. I'm tracking it pretty easily, but it's a tall field. And so it's like the snow, there's only snow in certain like openings.
Yeah.
And so I'm like finding blood on the snow, and it's kind of tricky to go from finding blood on the snow to finding blood in grass.
Yeah.
And so it's like those spots where it's like, it's grass or it's like a big bunch of stuff. It's like it might be smeared with blood, or it might be another 5 yards before I actually see it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm following this blood trail, and I'm noticing that the blood, it's not like hitting the snow and melting down into the snow at all. It looks like it looks like icicles of blood. And I'm like, dude, if this thing's starting to freeze up, and I mean, she's running, and I don't know how fast she's running, 30, 40 miles an hour, and it's -5, like it's probably freezing as it's coming, like dripping out of her. Mm-hmm. And so I follow the blood trail. I call Austin. I'm like, dude, I don't know like what's going on right now. I'm on the blood trail and I'm following it fairly easily. But then all of a sudden I'll hit a spot and I'm like, I don't know which direction it went from here in this 5 foot tall grass. And continue on. It ends up in my backyard, like right behind my shop. He shows up. We track it there. I realize it jumped the fence into the neighbor's. And I didn't like scan the neighbor's field when I first saw it. But by the time you got there, it was basically dark. We had headlamps on right away. And I'm like, I couldn't see anything distinctly in this cut cornfield. And so I'm thinking, okay, if it made it in that field, it made it across that field.
Yeah.
And so my hopes just kept going down and down and down. It's like I replay the shot in my mind. Everything felt good. Don't know what happened. And it would have been great to see the impact of the arrow. But contacted that neighbor, crossed his field. Found where it crossed onto another neighbor's property. And then we ended up backing out. I had no way to contact him at that point. So I called a guy that I know who knows him. I said, hey, could I get his number? Or I called a guy that I know, and I was like, hey, do you know this guy, first of all? And he's like, yeah, I know him. And I said, is there any way you could send me his number? I need to see if I can go check his field. And his response was, dude, definitely do not go in his field without talking to him. He's kind of crazy and like it would not be a good move. He's like, but I'll send you his number. And he's like, just make sure it's not like, hey, man, gonna go check your field. It's like, call him. If he doesn't answer, leave a voicemail, ask him to call back, that type of thing. So that's what I did. Tried again, no response. And so at this point, I've been watching trail cameras to see if there's any injured deer. I'm going to keep calling him. The weather's been good enough to where, you know, it'll still be fine. You know, I've hung deer for a long period of time. But I'm just losing hope more and more and more.
Buzzard Roost saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost Saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost Saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
And you had told me on the phone, like, you were like, this is just a weird track. And I'm like, what is he talking about? And when I got there, like, it was the weirdest thing. It literally seemed like everything was freezing on this deer and then falling off. And even we got to one point where there was a decent size, like, scab. And, like, we had lost blood. We're following tracks, found this scab, and all of a sudden we found more blood.
And it wasn't even a scab. It was like literally a blood icicle that had formed on this deer. And it was a long way in between blood at this point. I mean, we're hundreds of yards past the shot site.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood trail was good, and then it would slow down, and then it was good, and then it would slow down. And then it seemed like it completely dried up, and we're walking across a cornfield that should be very easy because there's snow on almost the entire thing. And it seemed like there was nothing for 10 yards. And then all of a sudden we find this like hockey puck of frozen blood, and then all of a sudden the blood trail opened up again.
Yep.
And so I'm like, that's literally what's happening. It is coming out of this wound,
yeah,
freezing. And then it wasn't until that fell off. It was like forming a snow cone on the outside of it. And then the whole thing fell off.
That's crazy.
And then it started bleeding again.
Yeah. That's wild.
I'm convinced it's a dead deer. And I bet it's over at that pond on that guy's property.
Yeah.
Like that's what my gut tells me. Because the blood was bright red. Or at least from what we could tell was bright red. I mean, it was kind of hard to tell when it was freezing.
It was frozen,
So quick. And you couldn't, there were no bubbles because it was freezing.
There were a couple, like, in the tall grass when I was walking, there were a couple bigger stalks of grass and, like, smaller trees that I could see a significant amount of blood on. And it looked like it was bubbles in the blood, but it, like, froze right away. And so it was, like, it looked like spots where there was a bubble at one point, if that makes sense. I mean, it was, like, I mean, it looked like you took a paintbrush, and then it was like there was just some texture on it that I was like, man, that seems like blood. But I just think it has to be single lunged with the amount of blood and with how far it ran. Like, there's no way a good double lung shot that deer's going that far.
Single lung and maybe liver or something. Maybe it turned and quartered to you a little bit, or who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, but so enough about kind of the bad season of 2023.
Oh, you mean an hour of me talking about my tragedies long enough?
It's just, it's making me feel better because I've always like looked at you and the bucks you've killed and been like, seriously, really? Like last year where you got to watch that big buck go down?
Oh, that was sweet.
I think it was corn. I was just like, of course. And I'm over here like hunting that thing.
Dude, that's a velvet buck, man. Come on.
No. But 2024, what do you have planned?
So Sam and I just did a podcast about this actually on the Nomadic Outdoorsman, and I was basically asking her how many trips I could go on. You know, I'll hunt around here. She won't be pregnant this fall, which is awesome. I was like, so how many trips can I go on? And she's like how big of trips? I'm like, I mean, overnight trips. And she's like, I don't know, like maybe two before now and see, like, if you want to do two spring and summer and then like two this fall. And I was like, oh shoot, like four trips. And she's like, but those are like week long trips. And I was like, okay, that's better. And she's like, is that enough? And I was like, well, I'm just trying to think, because like I've got shed hunting and turkey hunting multiple places, and then deer hunting and elk hunting and hog hunting and python and iguana hopefully down in Florida. And so she's like, well, I mean, like turkey hunting, if you go up with your cousin, how many days are you going to go? I'm like, I don't know, probably like four. And she's like, oh, yeah, if it's only 4 days, go for it. And I go, well, you make that sound like that's unlimited 4-day trips.
Yeah.
She's like, just leave some time at home in between there. And I was like, okay, sweet. So at this point, I mean, what I think I'm going to do for sure is I think starting in March, I'm going to go down, meet up with a guy, and do some python, iguana, chameleon, like invasive hunting down in Florida. We've been talking for a year and a half on TikTok, and finally, I think it's going to happen. I'll probably do some hog hunting while I'm down there. Then April, I think April is Oklahoma TAC, and so I think I'm going to go out there. I've got a buddy coming up from Florida with some friends that are going to do that, so I might join him. But I'm going to go back down to New Mexico, maybe Arizona, for shed hunting in April, like once most of them have dropped, or a significant amount at least. And then turkey hunting, you know, I'll try to hit that while I'm in Florida, hit that here. As far as other big trips, I've always got my Wisconsin trip during rifle season. I think we're going to do Wisconsin archery again with the XOP crew. And then I'll go back out to Colorado. I've been talking with my buddy. I'm like, man, I might go over-the-counter archery this year. Like, I've been dying to archery elk hunt. And he's like, no, man. Like, dude, we're rifle hunting. And I'm like, it sounds like everybody wants to switch to a new spot. And he's like, I haven't heard that, dude. I'm going back to the same spot. And I'm like, dang it. You just made that really difficult, because I do love that hunt, but I think that archery elk hunting would be unbelievable. He's like, dude, go to Wyoming, Montana, Arizona, go somewhere else. He's like, you can do that anywhere. And so I'm trying to think of places that I've got connections that might be able to point me in the right direction as far as that goes. So, like, those are a lot of the big ones. Obviously, there's always the, like, there's really small chance, but there is a chance that I draw a big tag like a moose. I'll keep putting in for elk in Kentucky, Pennsylvania, moose in Maine, moose, basically everything in Colorado I put in for. And then I'm going to expand the states that I put points in for. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've got right now. But the awesome thing about the hunting community and having a podcast and making these connections is I get offers to go all over the place, and I want to start taking people up on it. Like, one guy was like, dude, I'm in Idaho. I trap wolves. I'm like, yeah, yeah, that sounds awesome. but it's weighing, it's really at this point just weighing out, you know, how much time am I okay leaving my wife and kids?
Yeah.
And it's not like restrictions that she's putting on me. Like the fact that she says I can do 4 7-day plus trips a year. And then on top of that, multiple 4 or 5 day trips. But knowing that it is time away from them, like that's my biggest challenge and my biggest hesitation. So
yeah.
Who knows, man? It could be like a crazy, crazy year full of different things. But we're also trying to buy a house, so that's going to factor into
it. True. Well, my secret this year for my success is go to Walmart, get you some blue Hanes underwear. Every time I've worn my blue Hanes, I've had success. So if you want to have a good season next year, blue Hanes underwear.
But what if it's only your blue Hanes? Like, do I need to steal yours?
I now have 2 pairs, so I'll give you a pair.
Is one of them more successful than the other?
Yes. So here's the story on those. So
the fact that you have this all down so well between which pair of underwear is more successful.
No, get this. So I need new underwear, got new underwear, and I wore these blue Hanes to elk hunt in Colorado, opening day, shot the elk. So then we'll skip. I don't know what. I was probably wearing the blue Hanes when I killed the does that I've killed, but first buck, wearing the blue Hanes that I just walked. I walked up on the buck and was like, okay, here we go. Second buck, blue Hanes. So then it just started to become a tradition. Well, I took them with me to Georgia for Christmas. And somehow in the laundry or whatever, they're at my in-law's house. So I've been doing a lot of duck hunting, and I was doing terrible. Told Madison, I'm going to Walmart. I'm buying some blue Hanes. Blue Hanes underwear, very next day, called and shot my first Drake Mallard. And I was like, it's the blue Hanes.
Dude, so, according to that criteria, I need to burn every piece of hunting clothing that I own right now. It is all bad luck.
We've all heard the saying, a picture tells 1,000 words. And the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the U.S. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
He gave a haircut to a doe.
I did. That was much later. Yeah.
Was it much later? Well,
yeah, that was like 2 weeks ago. My drop away rest and drop. Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. You know, your story of the first deer you shot at, it kind of reminds me of that. Like, felt great about the shot. It was like a 20-yard shot, and it just sounded weird. It felt weird when it left my hand, and I could see the hair, like, come off her back, and she ran off fine. I was like, what the heck just happened? How did I – like, that was a chip shot. How did I miss? Come to find out, I took my bow home later that day, shot a few times, and my drop away rest wouldn't drop. Took it to the bow shop. They're like, yeah, it should be working right. It's not. I don't know what to tell you. You just got to get a new one. So
here's what I'm going to say that we can wrap up this podcast. Cam, he shoots a Matthews. Dan
shoots a Matthews. No, I'm taking
Austin
over.
Austin shoots a Hoyt. And who's had a very successful season and who has had troubles? That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
He can't even argue it.
No, I'm just trying to think. Remember how, like, 10 minutes ago on this podcast, you're like, I used to look at all of the deer that Dan shoots, and I was so jealous, and I was chasing.
There you go.
Things. You were shooting that Bowtech, though, that you sold me.
Oh, dude, that Bowtech was bad news. I found out, you told me this year what happened with it. I was like, I loved that bow, but with my last name Matthews, being from Wisconsin, I just feel like I got to shoot a Matthews.
Loyal.
And so I got rid of it. And yeah, dude.
Dude, I loved that bow.
It, like, was a for real. Great, it was a freaking great bow, wasn't it?
It was a fantastic bow.
Dude, that thing was light. I mean, the accuracy of it was smooth. That's the first bow I ever set up to shoot like long range. Mm-hmm. And like my groupings at 60 yards, like I would put a half a dozen arrows in a 4-inch circle mm-hmm. at 60 yards. And I was like, I didn't realize bows were this good. I mean, yeah. I literally grew up shooting a bow and I didn't have enough money to buy arrows. So I used my dad's arrows and he had like a bucket, like a 5-gallon bucket. And there were arrows of every length, shaft diameter. Like some of them were real fletching. Some of them were veins. Some of them, I kid you not, like the, it was like aluminum and carbon. Gosh. And I mean, it's like the type of thing you go into a thrift store or like an antique shop and they just have a bundle of arrows of every different brand. Like I literally grew up. That's what I started shooting, were just the most mixed bunch of arrows you've ever seen.
I will say, like, so I used to shoot that PSE, and it was okay. But when I shot that Bowtech that you sold me, it was night and day difference. And I realized, like, there's nothing wrong. If you're getting into hunting, there's nothing wrong with a $300, $400 bow. It's going to kill deer.
Yeah.
But when you step up and you're looking at those flagship bows that are $1,000 plus, there is a huge difference, because that Bowtech opened my eyes to, it honestly opened my eyes to bow hunting, because this bow, I was like, yeah, I'm extending season. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
When I started shooting that Bowtech, I was like, oh my gosh, I love bow hunting. I could leave my rifle and never rifle hunt again. That's how much I loved it. And you know, the main reason I shoot the Hoyt VTM now is because it feels like that Bowtech.
Oh, nice.
Like I switched to a carbon one, and it was a Bowtech carbon one. It just didn't feel the same. And I switched over to that Hoyt, and it was like, this feels almost identical to that Bowtech. And I love my Hoyt. And now I give you guys crap. I love Matthews too. Like I would own one.
He would shoot one.
But I mean, my Hoyt, I love that thing. It's been too good to me to switch. So
we'll see how next year is.
Yeah.
Dude, there's times when I'm just like, man, I just want to switch everything up. Like I see all of the new technology, but really if you look at it, the increase in technology, the increase in accuracy, the increase in IBO speed, all of that changes by like 1% or a couple percent max. And so it's like everyone's going to micro diameter arrows now. There's so many changes every single year that it's like, man, if you can shoot accurately, you might as well stick with it.
Yep.
Obviously when you have a bow explode, you can't really stick with it, but that's where I'm at. I'm like, I'd love to shoot the newest bow, but it's like, if I just keep going with the bow I have, it's going to be great. And like, I feel like 5 years is a good time frame to switch. Cause it's like, okay, now it's pretty significant, the difference, but even a $300, $400 bow that's this year's model is about equivalent to what the best bow on the market was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like, people shouldn't be ashamed of going and getting a bow like that. If it's comfortable, if you can shoot well with it, do it.
Mm-hmm. So should we do the around our campfire? Should we just nix that? Cause we kind of just did it.
We could do it. All right. Quick.
All right, so I don't know if we did this segment the first time you're on, but pretty much paint a picture of, we're sitting around the campfire, and you're giving advice, telling a story, kind of that last thing on today's episode that you would share.
Don't give up, even when things suck and you can't seem to shoot a deer with your bow, just get out there. Like, it's always going to get better. I've had friends that have had seasons way worse than mine, and they're like, dude, I got to pack it up. Like, I got to just quit, man. I'm sick of doing this. Just keep practicing, keep grinding. Luck changes. Everybody, literally every hunter has or has had or will soon have a bad year. And that's
Don't
what I had
speak
to,
that over me.
Dude, that's what I had to tell myself this year. It's like, I've had great years where I've filled 3 different species of deer tags and an elk tag. And it's just like, dude, things couldn't get better than this. They definitely could get a lot worse. Yeah. And it did this year for me. But yeah, just stick with it. It'll change.
Yeah. Are you wanting to share too?
No.
Okay.
No, I was saying you're good.
Sweet. Well, I want to give you a chance to kind of plug where people can find you online, find your podcast again before we get out of here.
Yeah. Everything is the Nomadic Outdoorsman, and it's outdoors man, not men.
There's one.
I think I messed that up every or like people mess it up every now and then typing it in, but it should be up there when you search, podcasts, socials, all of it. So go check that out. We've got an online shop, which we put almost zero time into. So like, if you want a high quality sweatshirt, probably don't go buy my sweatshirt. it's like the cheap one on Printful. But yeah, just find me at the Nomadic Outdoorsman. Hit me up. Like, I love meeting new people. I make it a point to hunt with 20 new people a year, and I've got a bunch planned this year. People I've never met, total strangers. One of these days, they're going to sedate me and take my kidney, but it hasn't happened so far. So it's kind of weird meeting people, like total strangers online.
Yeah.
My wife got me into that. She's like, hey, we're going to go meet like 5 different influencer families around the country. And I'm like, we're going to die. I think is what you mean.
We're going to be killed.
Now we have a lot of really great friends doing that. So, I mean, we do our research. We make sure they're real people.
Yeah.
They're not some robot from China. But, well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, thanks for being on. I know that you've made a big influence on Austin, and I've kind of subtly in the background kept up with your season and stories and stuff. Like Austin mentioned earlier, when all that crazy stuff was going on, we were hunting together and he was showing me the video. We were talking about it. So I know that you've made a big influence on him and me as well. So just want to thank you for your time. I know you got kids and a family. You're a busy guy, but you know, for me, it's cool to actually get to meet you. I've heard Austin talk a lot about you, hear a lot of crazy stories, but it's good to meet you and just thank you for your time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to get out and hunt together, and man, yeah. Just keep plugging away.
Yeah. Absolutely. We'll show Austin how the Matthews boys do it.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
I like that.
All righty, guys. Thank you for listening. And don't forget, all it takes is just one. We'll catch you on the next one.